I know that you're feeling sorry for me for having to follow that act. Just think of the wonderful lessons that God has taught our children through this cantata in terms of, well, just what it means to be the church, to give God our very best. Think of the many hours of preparation that this involves. And think also of the example of working so hard to work together to produce something that would really be for the benefit of others. That, again, is a real picture of the church in action, and it is something for which we give thanks in addition to the lesson itself of faith in God, imitating the faith that David had that allowed him to disregard outward circumstances and believe in a God who is great. I know you've already expressed your appreciation for the choir and for the cast, but I do want to allow us to particularly honor Christine Vasco, who is the director, and invite her to just stand up, please. She's amazing to watch. And Kathy Weld as well, Kathy Weld over here. And the rest of those that helped out with the music, the sound crew that had a tremendous job to make that work the way it did, the lighting, costumes, those who put together the costumes and props, and the wonderful set behind us, the backdrop, refreshments, parents who were faithful in getting their children to practices every time and bucking them up and encouraging them. If you have any involvement in making this happen, I want you to please stand that we might give thanks to God for your work. Please stand, parents and those who contributed in any other way. You know, I think it is the case that for most of us, there is no more attractive hero of our faith in the Old Testament, certainly, than King David, than David himself. The story is utterly arresting, and it's not surprising then that the Bible says of him and only of him that this was a man after God's own heart. It's a remarkable description, a man after God's own heart. And obviously the encounter, the faithful challenge to Goliath depending on the Lord that is recorded for us in 1 Samuel chapter 17, this is a huge reason why we think of him as a man after God's own heart, but it's surely not the only reason. After this chapter in the book of 1 Samuel, there are 12 more chapters telling the story of David, and in all of those, as well as in 24 chapters that we get later on in the book of 2 Samuel that are all about David, So 36 chapters after this, you don't find another chapter that focuses on one of the exploits of David. It's not the case that, you know, he went from fighting Goliath and then later on he was thrown into a pit of viper snakes and succeeded in overcoming them, and then he outran a volcano believing in God. There are no other exploits really to speak of. That's why children's cantatas are built on no other chapter than just this chapter, this encounter with Goliath, although I realize the prop of seeing a 9-foot-tall man is part of the attraction. But no other. What are then all those other chapters about? Well, that's all about what it means to be a man after God's own heart when it comes to problems that are even bigger than a 9-foot giant. You may have come here this morning with a giant problem on your heart. And yet you watch the cantata and you thought, well, that doesn't have a whole lot to do with my situation. Becoming an expert at slinging a stone isn't really going to do the job. Maybe you even saw more deeply into it that it's really more about faith, the faith in a God in whom we can, well, we can do anything through God who strengthens us. So, maybe in that sense it applied to you. But what you need to know is in the chapters that follow in 1 Samuel, what we have is David encountering those other giant-sized problems. In fact, David's life was not a career after this of uninterrupted success, of going from one big challenge successfully to another. Instead, it was a series of unremitting disasters, of terrible struggles, of adversity. You almost get to thinking that if this is what it means to be a man after God's own heart, you're not so sure you want to sign up. because right after this, King Saul, who should have been so indebted to David, actually ends up becoming his most fierce, implacable enemy. Saul does everything possible to ruin David's life. He responds to David with terrible jealousy. He starts misconstruing everything about David. He misreads everything David says, everything David does, as if it were intended to put him in a bad light. I don't know if you've ever had a situation where you were under attack, maybe by someone who had a higher position, as Saul's position was over David. And that person almost acted as if they were intent on ruining your life. That was certainly the case for David in his relationships with Saul. Saul tried to turn the entire people against David. He made him enemy number one, implied that he was really the worst of possible foes. He even tried to arrange it so the Philistines would kill David, believe it or not. In addition to that problem, David also had the heartbreak of his marriage to Princess Michal be broken up and have Michael's affections for him alienated by Saul. And Michal, in the end, even betrays David by telling a lie that only emboldens Saul in his hatred of David. Imagine in 2 Samuel some of the heartbreaks that David had to face, like losing an infant son. Some of you know that grief. Or how about when he lost an adult son and that grief? Or had one of his other sons turn against him, perhaps even more painful to David, when Absalom raised a rebellion against his own father. It just is one picture after another of giant-sized problems where God, who is great, showed even greater power in David's weakness than in that instance, that celebrated victory over Goliath. David himself speaks of this in Psalm 34. He said, "The righteous cry out, the Lord hears them." This is a picture of his own heart, his confidence in the God who makes his strength perfect in our weakness. He said, "God delivers them from all their troubles. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit." He knew what he was talking about. "A righteous man may have many troubles." The promise of being a man after God's own heart is not a promise to have a trouble-free life. "A righteous man may have many troubles," David said in Psalm 34, "but the Lord delivers them from them all." Indeed, the psalmist says, "I will be with him in trouble, and I will deliver him." God is with us in our troubles. He doesn't just save us from them. David had another kind of giant-sized problem, and perhaps it was even more massive than the ones I've just mentioned. Not only are those giants outside, the different adversities that he faced all his life long, but there was also a giant-sized problem inside. Those of you who have read 1 and 2 Samuel that tell the story of David, you know what that problem is. It's the problem of sin. And two particularly scandalous sins come to mind for most of us. One is his illicit relationship with a new woman named Bathsheba, and the other was a sin of murder where he tried to cover up that relationship by murdering Uriah the Hittite, a loyal soldier in the service of David. David arranged for his death. Both were atrocities that the Bible names a sin and makes no excuses for, and David had to confront. But those weren't the only ones. There are seven other major sins that David commits in the course of those chapters. He lies in such a way as putting an entire community at Nob and at risk for their lives. He wants to get even with Nabal and has murderous intent about this man who he thought cheated him. And the list just goes on and on. So you say, well, how could this be a man after God's own heart if he's not any better than that? If his life is so blemished by many serious failures, moral failures. What makes him a man after God's own heart is what he did with those sins. And what he did with them, well, whatever courage it took to fight Goliath, it took even greater courage to admit he was wrong. to accept correction wherever it came from, including from Abigail at one occasion, a wise woman who spoke up to him and confronted him publicly, to admit he was wrong, to confess his sin, even publicly, telling people that didn't need to know, in order that he would point the finger at himself rather than someone else, and then to repent. Most of us, well, you know, we frankly have a much better chance of learning from our mistakes if we weren't so busy denying them. David learned from his mistakes, but mostly he models for us this contrite heart, a man of tremendous and tender conscience. Every time confronted by one of those sins, he's the first to accept responsibility. When Abiathar, who is the lone survivor of the disaster at Nob, comes to David, David, who had been responsible indirectly for that because of a lie, David said to him, "I'm responsible for the death of your father's whole family." He admitted it publicly. He could have blamed Saul. Saul was the one who, after all, did the murdering. But he accepted responsibility. At the Cave of En-Gedi, another case, says David was conscience-stricken for having cut off a corner of Saul's robe in an act of open rebellion. On another occasion, when Abigail stopped him in his tracks, he blessed her publicly. He made it clear that she had kept him from bloodshed, from avenging himself, which he certainly would have done. He would have gotten even. He could have pretended, "Oh, I was just bluffing." But he named the sin and accepted it. And when Nathan pointed at him and said, "Thou art the man," he, in his broken heart, came to God confessing his sin. Our God is great. Oh, he's great not only in his omnipotent power, even more wondrously, he's great in his mercies and compassion and in his love. "Oh, have mercy on me, O God," he prayed, "according to your unfailing love, according to your great compassion, blot out my transgressions, wash away all my iniquity, and cleanse me from my sin." On another occasion, we read, "So great is his love for those who fear him," or, "In your great mercy, turn to me." Do you have a giant-sized problem that you brought with you to Park Street Church this morning? Then let this cantata minister to your heart in a way that you might not have expected. You might have expected it only to be an entertainment, enjoyable, and seeing the little ones perform. But listen to the real lesson that our God is great, greater than even giant-sized problems of the kind that David's whole life was about.